D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. Pleased to be joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Predators General Manager Barry Trotz for the first of our weekly conversations with Trotz as the NHL season is here. Barry, we are happy to have you. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing very well. Thank you very much. So we are really looking forward to these conversations with you every week. So let's start with Luke Evangelista, who you signed to a two-year, $6 million contract over the weekend. Help us understand why it took until last weekend to get Luke under contract, because usually bridge contracts do not require this much negotiating. So what happened?
Well, I think in both sides, the one side had a number, the other side had a number, and both sides were stubborn on their number. And when it finally got done, I think probably both sides thought it was going to be a lot easier. The numbers would be a little closer. And at the end of the day, we felt that it was both sides could compromise a little bit. We could get a deal done. And so we did that. So good on his representation. Good on us to get him back. Hopefully, obviously with a visa, we will know in the next couple of days if he'll be eligible to play as soon as Thursday or Saturday.
Brady Martin made the opening night roster. He will be the second youngest player in Predators history on the day of his NHL debut, assuming he plays on Thursday. You've had some of the youngest players in Predators history. You've had Scott Hartnell. You've had Seth Jones, Scotty Upshaw, among others. What gives you confidence that Brady is ready for the NHL at such a young age?
Well, we're gonna play this one game at a time right now, but right now Brady has given no indication that his game cannot translate to the National Hockey League. The one thing about Brady is very intelligent. Two, I think he's got great, spatial awareness. A lot of different young players, want to grab the puck and go as far as they can, and then when they start running out of options, then they start looking for people. Brady doesn't do that. Brady's really all the top players they do. They map the ice out as soon as they're on the ice, and they're mapping their next play, even if they don't have the puck. And that's the one thing that I like about Brady in terms of his instincts and IQ. And then the other thing I think I really like about Brady is, he's very, very versed already at a young age to be on the right side of pucks in the right type of situations. He doesn't leave too early, all those things. So I think I used I went back old school a little bit and reached back in my Rolodex in my head of players that he reminds me of is a guy like Brian Trotche. There's a hardness to his game. He's very competitive. He's not going to wow you every shift by, grabbing the puck and going end to end. But he's going to map out the ice, and he can play with good players. And when you can play with good players, you're going to be productive. He's not scared of the moment. And so he's got a lot of things that translates into the National Hockey League. You see a lot of top players at a junior. It takes some time for their unique skill sets to translate. Well, Brady has a lot of his skill sets do. A lot of stuff that, you try to teach the young players in the National Hockey League or in the junior leagues once they get to the NHL. Brady already has that in place, which is a really good factor for him, and he's shown very well.
Predators GM Barry Trotz is with us. Barry, it's rare for a team that missed the playoffs by as many points as the Predators did last season to bounce back and make it to the playoffs the following year. Is it realistic to expect this team to make the kind of significant bounce back that will be required to get back into the playoff picture this year?
Well, I would like to answer that with a yes, but you just don't know. I mean, we're in one hell of a division right now. If you look at the the polls, if you will. A lot of the veteran teams, a lot of the teams that are considered elite teams are in our division. And then in our conference, we've got some good teams. All I know is that we're, I said that, our plan is in pen and the path is in pencil. And if you look back at last year, I was hoping to have a really good blend and stay in that playoff mode for another year and buy some time so our young kids can get there. When I felt it wasn't going to happen last year, I moved, I think, 11 players out, brought 10 players in. We brought our average age in that all those transactions down by about 4 years. Put in some pieces in place this year that are going to, I don't expect a lot of movement with our group. I said I was going to make a path for the young players. We've done that. And what you've seen is the young players have taken advantage of it, even with Luke not in, and I consider Luke a young player. Luke wasn't in camp. What that did was open up great opportunity for Joachim Kemmel. It made great opportunity for Matthew Wood, Reed Schaefer, Cole O'Hara, who I think is going to be a really good player for us. And all of a sudden, we've got great competition. We had a really good camp. And so, we've got to just, in the past, we've always been a little bit of a bubble team, always fighting for a playoff. So there really wasn't a path for some of the young guys. It was very difficult for them. I've made it really easy for them right now. And, we've tried to extend it a little bit, but we're in a build mode. We're going to build with our young kids. And that we've got some good veterans who I believe have really also settled in and bought into the plan. And we fixed up our defense. Having Roman Josi skating the way he is this year, last year he was off. He just was. And he looks really back to the Roman Josi that everybody knows and loves. We added some size in Nick Purbix and Nick Haig. Those two guys are going to hopefully settle everything down in the back end. You look at our defense right now. A number of members that were playing defense for us at the end of last year, they're not playing here right now. They're the depth in Milwaukee right now, and it's no indictment on them at all. They did a great job, but we're just deeper on defense, and by being deeper on defense, that will sort out for our goaltenders. Our coaching staff has done a really good job. They've tweaked some of the systems for our group, hopefully giving us a better chance on our 5-on-5. I thought we last year were not very good 5-on-5. We've got to be a better 5-on-5 team. I thought our special teams were pretty good considering the personnel changes and some of the holes that I created once we realized that we're probably not going to be there and we were setting up for this year.
We're talking with Barry Trotz, Nashville Predators GM. Now, Trotz, over the last couple of seasons.
throw the Trotzy in there.
Yeah, Trotzy.
Hey, Trotz. Yeah. Hey, Mason.
Over the last couple of seasons, UC Soros has struggled. Last season was probably, if you're just talking about save percentage and goals against, this probably was his worst season since the first year. What have you seen in UC that makes you think it's going to be different? Or is it just about the team playing better around it? Because there were times last year when UC held his own, but the guys around him just didn't hold theirs.
Well, I will say this. On your first statement, you said the last couple of years he has not been good. Mm-hmm. It was not really last year. Mm-hmm. The year before, he was very good for us. We made the playoffs. He stole a lot of games. Our team played better in front of him. Last year, he didn't have the season that we all expected. But that is a product that a lot of times with a team in front of you. Mm-hmm. We were not predictable in our own zone. We left them exposed on two-on-ones and breakaways and backdoor passes that I don't care who's in net. You can have, Connor Hellebuck from Winnipeg in net, and he would have his worst season ever because we were no good in front of him. And the things about that we've done, we've changed some of the D zone. We fixed up the defense, and we're defending a lot different around the net than we have in the last 2 years here, or last year and a half. And UC Saros' strength is his ability to read the play and his ability to move. And when you don't have predictability, and I think we made it a lot more predictable. When you don't have predictability, you're not fast, you're not reading the game because it's too chaotic. So we're trying to slow it down in our own end, not only for UC, but also for all our goaltenders, but also our players. So it's a product to me. Goaltending is a product of the team that's in front of you. You still have to be a good goaltender, no question, because you're the last line of defense, and he bails us out. You know, we saw, even in the last preseason game, I saw the great goaltending display on both sides, Carolina's goaltender and UC, and he made the big saves at the important times, and that's what you want. And last year, we didn't give him a chance. So I know there's still lots of gas in the tank with him. I think he's got something to prove, and our team has something to prove. So I expect a much better year from him. But we are younger. We are a little bit less experienced. But you got to be excited about you got Brady Martin. When's the last time that we had a young player like that? I think there's only five players in the National Hockey League right now that are from his draft that are still with their teams, and that's Schaefer, Misa, I think Kindle in Pittsburgh, and I think Coots in Vancouver. Those are the only players from that draft that are still with the teams. We could start the season with five rookies on our team. That's incredible. When I came here, we said we were going to have to build, and I said we can blend this a little bit. I'm going to try to thread the needle. I tried doing that. It didn't work last year, so. The plan hasn't changed. We're just pushing the plan up a little bit, 6 months or whatever. Now you got the young guys coming in. They're a little more experienced. They're going to get experience this year because we left a path for them to do that. And now they just got to do it. And it's exciting to see a Brady Martin play. It's exciting to see I take Joakim Kemmel. I mean, he's taken advantage of the opportunity. Last game was a great example of that. Big hit in overtime. He played a really strong game right through, was physical, had some chances. Then he has one of the biggest hits I've ever seen on 3-on-3. And then he draws a penalty and then scores the game winner on the power play. So that's exciting about all our young guys. And then you got guys like Tanner Mullendijk. So we have 11 first-round picks that are 22 years old or younger, developing somewhere in our system. We're going to have to develop some in Nashville, some in Milwaukee, some are going to get developed in junior, and some in college, and some in Russia, and Sweden, and Finland, and all those places. So
they're everywhere.
Exactly.
Where are they not?
Like, I can't tell you how excited I am.
Do you have anybody on the North Pole, Barry?
Exactly. They're everywhere.
They're all over the globe. Barry Trotz is excited, and he's with us here. He's going to join us every Tuesday at 5 o'clock here on 102.5 The Game. Barry Trotz, Predators GM. Barry, it was no secret. We just got done looking at a poll from the media at The Athletic that Andrew Burnett, for lack of a better term, is the number one guy on the hot seat, right?
Oh, yeah.
You said this, right? But I'm curious, from the time that you explained that he was coming back last spring after the season was over and what your process was going to be, how he's handled it, and what you saw from him try to go through these things, for example, like you just talked about, how do we defend better and become more predictable? How do you think he's taken the ball and the challenge of making this right and taking the opportunity to come back stronger?
I think he's done exactly what I would expect. He's come back with a clear and concise plan. He's made adjustments to his roster. He's asked questions. He's listened, not only to advantage, but to the players, because they got to work this out together. And I think he's done a wonderful job communicating that, communicating the plan, not only with myself but with the players. More importantly, the players. They're the ones that are getting it done night in and night out. So I love the fact that through all the things that were thrown at him last year, the high expectations, the veteran players, the the poor start, the GM moving a bunch of players around and having an unstable lineup, and sort of preparing for this year, he grew a lot. He had to grow, and I loved it that he did. And I want him to display it again. I look back at my time, and thank God that David Poile had the patience that he had with me. And I think I ended up having a pretty good career. So I see a lot of the attributes that hopefully David saw in me way back when. I see them in Andrew, and I think he's got he's got the right tools. He keeps adding them to his tool belt. And if you know anything about Andrew, you know, you love to play with him in terms of him being the coach. I think last year was hard on everybody, and everybody wanted to blame, somebody. And it's easy. The easiest thing is to blame the coach. It really is. It's, and I believe in the players that we have, and I believe in the coach that we have. And it's not going to be easy. It's going to be difficult because we're at that stage where we're not in a rebuild, we're in a build. We're building our young players, everyone from Zach LaRue to Schaefer to Upko to Mullendijk to Kemmel, Weisblatt, I can go on and on, Martin, even Svechkov, who's a young player. All those players are going to be the core of this team. When I got here a few years ago, this team wouldn't quit. We burnt it down and picked it apart a little bit and said, hey, it's time for reset, rebuild, whatever you want to call it. And this team wouldn't go away. I think 2 years ago or 3 years ago would be now. We lost out in game 81 or 82 where we finally didn't make the playoffs. And then the next year, everybody had us. Being sort of at the bottom of the league, and we got 100 points. We're right there. So, and then last year, everybody thought we were winning the cup, and I said temper it down a little bit, and we didn't have a very good year. And then, with all the moves that we made it real difficult to have a good year at that point because there was so much change. But I think everything's settled in. We have a plan with our young guys and our veteran guys that. I can't tell you how well we'll do, but I can tell you that we're building. And that's the exciting thing for this organization is this. The cupboards haven't been this full for a long, long time, but you're still going to have to develop the talent. And if there are going to be some hard nights because there's some really good teams in this league, and especially in our division.
Barry Trotz is with us. Barry, Steven Stamkos, Jonathan Marchessault, Brady Shea, they're all different people, but they all had won a lot of games when they came here, and they had high expectations. They probably hadn't ever had a year collectively like they had last year with frustration. Why isn't this happening? All of this. How much more comfortable do you think they are this year going into the second season?
They're really comfortable. Willie, you probably are probably around the rink the most and get to talk to some of these guys. I mean, they're different people. Like if you talk to Stammer will tell you he thought coming to Nashville the easiest thing would have been the hockey part, just playing the game and all that, and the move and all that would be more difficult. It was the polar opposite last year for him. It was so easy because we've got such a good job in such a friendly city. And our organization takes care of the players as well as we do. All the things regarding the family and the move to the city was almost seamless for him. It was the hockey part that put him in a little bit of a spin cycle. He did, it was hard for him. He was a legacy player in a city. And what I'm hoping, and I we've had these discussions, is Stammer, it was a legacy player and left his stamp in Tampa Bay, and he's still got lots of gas in the tank. And what a great statement where we are with a lot of young guys like Stammer and Marchie and Brady to an extent, leave their mark in Nashville where they go, you know, at the end of their career, they said, man, I had a great career in Tampa Bay, and they'll probably someday maybe put a statue there. Who knows? But, and then I went to Nashville and I got this young team going, and now they're competing every year for cups, and they're going to, you know, they get such a great core. And I had a big effect on that. I think that's where those guys are right now. I sure hope they are. And I feel that.
Last thing for you, Barry. The first thing that a lot of people, and I'll just use Ray Ferraro as an example. I was listening to his podcast. The first thing they say when they evaluate the Predators, they say, okay, tell me about the center position. They look thin there. I know you've got guys in the pipeline down the road in 2 or 3 years you're excited about. But right now, what's your expectation level of what you can get down the middle?
Well, you know, every team can be built a little different. I would say, you know, and it's no, I don't want to, and you know, I believe in the guys that we have, obviously, but I would say if you stack up, you know, we've got Brady Martin, 18, and Svechkov's, 21, or maybe 22 here, and we got Holla and McCarron in the middle, and obviously O'Reilly there. If you stack up everybody's center ice position, we'd probably be towards the bottom of the league on the so-called experts positional depth chart, for instance. But, you know, a lot of teams that have had great success too can be dangerous off the wings. They just have to be responsible in the middle, but they can be dangerous on the wings. And we can do that. We can be dangerous with Forsberg and Stamkos coming off the wing and Marchessault coming off the wing and guys like Bunting chipping in and Evangelista off the wing. So if we're responsible and can get the puck to people up there, we can be a little more dangerous off the wing. The one thing I think, we haven't been a fast team. I'm trying to make us faster as an organization, but we've added a lot of foot speed on the back end. They're all good skaters. Will Speed's a good skater. Yossi's a good skater. Shea's a good skater. Barron's an excellent skater. Stashny's a good skater. Blankenberg's a good skater. Hague is a really good skater for a 6'6" guy. So, you know, a lot of our speed and our transition can come out of the back end. If we can get some what we call skin on teams F1 on the forecheck, our team's going to be hard to forecheck. You know, as long as we can execute, we had a little problem executing last year because we get back and we get run over, and that's on the forwards and it's on the D partner a little bit at times. And I think the coaching staff has really done a good job of addressing that. If we can break out quicker, we're going to be a much quicker team because we get jammed up on the walls and then you're just in a standstill foot race. You don't get anything done. So they've done a lot of work on breakouts and transitional stuff, but a lot of stuff in just D zone, because those are the 5-on-5 areas that really matter. When it comes down to it. And I've had teams here in Nashville, I've had teams that didn't have much offensive pop, but if you break out quickly and you transition cleanly with good execution, you create offense. It's when you don't do that is when things fall apart. And, you know, but like I say, we've got a lot of really talented young players. And I know you like your football like we all do. We have a lot of guys in the red zone right now in our organization with young players. Now, being in the red zone, you know how that works. You're either, you know, you're stalled out, you're kicking a field goal, or you're getting a touchdown and you're pushing it through. So that's where all these guys are. They're all in the red zone, in which, you know, a little bit of luck, a lot of work, and some confidence and some good team play. Yeah, some guys are going to get to the next level here, and that's what we're looking for.
Predators general manager Barry Trotz has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. He will join us every Tuesday at 5 o'clock. Barry, thank you so much for your time. We will chat next week.
All right. Take care, guys.
615-737-1025. Your reaction to our first of many chats with Barry Trotz over the course of the Predator season, 615-737-1025. We will react as well. Coming up next, DVD is presented by Bax Homeworks, which transforms kitchens, bathrooms, and living spaces into places you can't wait to come home to. Get a free estimate at baxhomeworks.com.
They all had won a lot of games when they came here, and they had high expectations. They probably hadn't ever had a year collectively like they had last year with frustration. Why isn't this happening? All of this. How much more comfortable do you think they are this year going into the second season?
They're really comfortable. You know, Willie, you probably are, you're probably around the rink the most and get to talk to some of these guys. I mean, they're different people. Like if you talk to Stammer will tell you he thought coming to Nashville, the easiest thing would have been the hockey part, you know, just playing the game and all that, and the move and all that would be more difficult. It was the polar opposite last year for him. It was so easy because we've got such a good job in such a friendly city, and our organization takes care of the players as well as we do. All the things regarding the family and the move to the city was almost seamless for him. It was the hockey part that, you know, put him in a little bit of a spin cycle. It was hard for him. He was a legacy player in a city. And what I'm hoping, and I we've had these discussions, is Stammer, it was a legacy player and left his stamp in Tampa Bay, and he's still got lots of gas in the tank. And what a great statement where we are with a lot of young guys like Stammer and Marchie and Brady to an extent, leave their mark in Nashville where they go, you know, at the end of their career, they said, man, I had a great career in Tampa Bay, and they'll probably someday maybe put a statue there. Who knows? But, and then I went to Nashville and I got this young team going, and now they're competing every year for cups, and they're going to, you know, they got such a great core. And I had a big effect on that.
That was Predators GM Barry Trotz just now with us. As one texter says, Barry always short with his words. If you know one thing about Barry Trotz,
he's going to give you the real.
He is not concise. But that's why we love Barry
you,
Trotz.
He's going to give you depth and detail.
Exactly. Yes, yes. Absolutely.
If you're looking for Cliff Notes,
he's turning over
if
every
you're short
stone.
On time,
good luck.
You're not going to get it. You're going to have to go back.
Yeah.
Yes. But
but you can never say that he is not accessible and
correct.
Open and detailed with what he shares with the fans
mm-hmm.
and the media.
I have,
not everybody's like that.
I have two reactions on our text line that I want to get to. I'll just read them both now, and then we can take the conversation wherever we want to go. George says, on that clip we just heard, he says, Trotz is delusional if he thinks Stamkos, Marchessault, and Shea are looking around the league and thinking about the impact they'll make on the team they won't be a part of 5 years from now. One texter who was texting throughout the interview, who clearly does not like Trotz, said, Trotz is utterly delusional. That's the word of the day, I guess. Trotz is utterly delusional about the goalie situation. Unbelievable. Where should we start?
I mean, you could take either one.
You choose.
Okay. When people say he's delusional, based on what? Like, what are your grounds? Are you looking at the team just based on last year and what they didn't accomplish? Because if that's the case, why would he be delusional with guys that he believed that can still play? And I think a lot of other people believe they can still play, but it just, last year, for whatever reason, it didn't work out the way everybody envisioned. But again, I don't understand this, you know, unless you just say, these guys he got is just trash. Like, they're not good. Because outside of that, I would tend to believe that these guys coming back in the system another year, They're more comfortable. They've aired out their grievances and everything else.
Festivus.
I would tend to believe the team will be better than what they were last year.
I agree with that. Mm-hmm. Frankly, it's not going to be difficult for them to be better than they were last year because they were.
We said that about the Titans.
The bar is very low.
Yes.
Remember that said that about the Titans and their sack problem?
But let's talk about UC Soros for a second.
Bar can always go lower.
Exactly.
If the ceiling is the roof, whatever the opposite of that is.
The basement. Rocky bottom.
Yes. So let's go back to the Soros thing. The texter says, Trotz is utterly delusional, which I guess is the word of the day, about the goalie situation. Unbelievable. UC Soros, we talked about the hot seat with Andrew Burnett. If I am putting together a pressure index of Predators players, so I'm just talking about the players, UC Soros is number one, and it's not even close because this is the first year of his new contract. His statistics have been steadily declining over the past couple of years. But what's interesting is the view of UC Soros around the NHL still remains favorable. The Athletic recently did their goalie tiers. We talk about the quarterback tiers. The Athletic does goalie tiers for the NHL. The panel that the authors used was comprised of eight goalie coaches, current and former NHL coaches, and private coaches who work with NHLers, and three retired NHL goalies. I think we would all say that's a pretty reputable panel, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
UC Soros was a tier two goalie, the high-level starter tier, a top 10 starter who is considered franchise quality, a goalie capable of handling the vast majority of starts for a good team and succeeding in a workhorse role. Soros dropped from tier one to tier two from last year's edition to this year's edition, tied for eighth in the NHL with Jeremy Swayman of the Boston Bruins. So there is still a high opinion of Soros around the league. Predators fans, however, who have been watching him over the past couple of years, clearly do not share that same opinion.
And Will, quickly, before you say that, do you think that he's the UC's the version, he's the hockey version of Dak Prescott, in a sense? And go at me with this one. We've seen UC Soros at his best. And usually the guys around him were at their best, too. The minute those guys around him aren't doing their job as effectively, it does affect him. And I think that's what happens with Dak Prescott. And because of that, people just take it as, oh, it's Dak Prescott or it's UC Soros. And that's why I asked the question to Barry, like, or is it more so the team than it is, you know, you're that worried about UC Soros?
Willie, before you answer that, let me just read to you quickly some of the insight from the goalie coaches and retired goalies who participated in this survey. One goalie coach said, quote, I still think he's a really good goalie. His athleticism, speed, and skating ability are unparalleled. He actually handles the puck a lot better than people give him credit for. He's not getting a ton of help back there. Another goalie coach said, a goalie needs the team in front of him to be able to make consistent reads. Every team plays a system with weaknesses, and there are certain types of plays that the team gives up. Goalies are able to cheat slightly towards certain situations. Last season, Soros got in a situation where everything was coming at him. It was all over the place, and it became very difficult to read.
And that's exactly what Barry Trotz just said when Derek asked him about UC Soros, the environment. He used the word predictable. Chris Mason says this all the time when he's on our show, on our broadcasts. He says, if you can make the environment predictable, a good goalie is going to put up good numbers. The Predators, and I think the equivalent, D-Mace, is a quarterback that has a terrible offensive line. You just can't be comfortable. You start feeling pressure when it's not there. You start second-guessing yourself. You start making rushed decisions, and you can't stay quiet, stay sound, and stay in your mechanics. I thought Kevin Woodley gave one of the best interviews we had all year long as Soros was going through the struggles. And he said, you can overcome it for a while. And he did. Until about early December, Soros was outperforming his team in terms of he was erasing a lot of mistakes. He was keeping them in games. He wasn't getting any goal support, but he was in the goal save above expected, he was doing pretty well. Then it just overwhelmed him. It collapsed. It cratered. And then he started to get into the tough parts. He lost a little confidence. He started second-guessing what the team was doing in front of him. And he started having some bad games for him. When people say, when people throw out this delusional thing, you would think that he's like 36 years old or something. He's only 30. I'm not saying he's going to be great when he's 30, 35, 36, 37, although Pekka, I believe, won the Vezina at age what, Adam, 36, 37?
Thereabouts. I don't remember the exact age.
So it's not like goalies can't play well into their mid-30s. Sergei Bobrovsky is still going strong. They're going to sign him to a new contract, according to Elliot Friedman. So I think UC Soros is held to a very, very high standard. And like a quarterback, is taking more of the blame than he should. Just like the same way, like I think a goalie sometimes gets more credit than he probably should. So all that to say, to me, show me the environment that they can create in front of him this year. Can they defend better, as Barry Trotz just laid out, what they're trying to do? If they can do that, UC Soros will be the least of their problems. I think he is going to be fine.
Quickly, let's go to Bob in Antioch on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Bob, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
What's been your opinion of Brady Martin, and what do you think will be best for him in the long term, to go back down or to stay up with the Predators? And my second question is, did LaRue have a bad camp? Is that the reason that he got sent to Milwaukee? I'll listen off air.
Thanks, Bob. Let's answer the second question first. Zachary LaRue suffered an injury early in training camp that kept him out for a while. And Andrew Brunette said yesterday that they want him to go to the American Hockey League and get that work in that he missed during the preseason. The expectation is that he will be back up with the big club. But that's why. Quickly, Willie, answer Bob's question on Brady Martin.
I thought that was good insight by Barry Trotz, that Brady Martin has an advanced hockey IQ that is allowing him to, at least to this point, not get schooled by just being too young to understand what it's going to take. So he's advanced in that area. He's also physically, if you look at him, there are some 18-year-olds that come out of that draft that look like they're 15. And they're really skilled, and you're trying to project what they're going to look like in 4 or 5 years. But currently, it's not the case. He's advanced enough physically that I think he's holding his own there. And the question is not really what's it going to look like on opening night. It's going to be, if he plays well in the first five, six handful of games, right, Adam? How will they try to decide the big decision of, do they keep him here the entire year? Because it's one thing to keep him for 8 or 9 games, get in the experience, get him around Ryan O'Reilly, get him around Steven Stamkos. But keeping him for the full season is a big commitment, burns a year of his contract. Is he that good?
615-737-1025. Any Predators thoughts, you can get them in. 615-737-1025. We will wrap up the show next. Plus, some breaking NFL news stemming from the Titans win in Arizona. We will discuss that coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Ving in 1025 The Game. D-Mace, Fingan, and Donick, 1025 The Game. Smashville Live is coming up next from Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. Nick Hag and Nick Perbix, the Knicks, will be the guest.
The Knicks!
The Knicks!
Nick at night.
New York Knicks?
Well, it will be the Knicks at night, so that is applicable. A programming note. Tomorrow's edition of DVD will be 2 hours from 3 to 5 because we will have our official Predators preview show from 5 to 7. Max Herz, Willie, and I will host. Andrew Brunette, Hal Gill, and Pete Weber will join us. So be sure to tune in for that. So DVD will be from 3 to 5, Predators preview show from 5 to 7. Let's get to Steve on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Steve, thank you for waiting. Please go ahead.
Thank you, guys. I really enjoyed the show.
Thank you.
Hey, I took away from that Four Nations hockey tournament because you had the elite players out there playing, and what I saw a big difference between them and the Predators was our defense. I mean, a lot of those in the Four Nations hockey tournament, a lot of the shots never even made to the goalie, and that's what we need to work on because we're leaving Soros, you know, out the dry by not doing that. And I just want to say that and get your thoughts. Hang up. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
I think it's the number one thing that they have gone back to the drawing board to assess is how do we create a better defensive environment? There's a lot of ways that you do that. One is the structure, as you heard Barry Trotz say. They want to block more shots. They want to be more predictable. In other words, predictable for Yusi Saros to read what's coming. What are we giving up in our system? If it's unpredictable and you give every team three options of how to beat you, no goalie can be effective in their mind. They're trying to do that. They also clearly tried to get bigger, adding Perbix, who's 6'4", Nick Hague, who's 6'6". They are bigger. They want to block more shots. The Predators were one of the lowest teams in the league at block shots or percentage of shots that were blocked. They were way down there. There were way too many times. Yusi Saros is not a big goalie, as we know. He doesn't take up a lot of space. So if you allow pucks to get through, when you're screening the goalie, you better block the shot. If you screen the goalie and it gets through, especially for a smaller goalie, you're going to give up more goals. And they were burned badly in that respect last year. So blocking shots will be a much bigger part of the lingo.
I mentioned some breaking NFL news stemming from the Titans win in Arizona from Adam Schefter. The Cardinals, I emphasize the Cardinals, not the NFL. The Arizona Cardinals are fining head coach Jonathan Gannon $100,000 for his sideline altercation with running back Amari DeMarcado, who dropped the football before crossing the goal line Sunday on what would have been a 72-yard touchdown run. There will be no further discipline for Gannon. So the Cardinals, not the NFL, the Cardinals are fining Gannon $100,000. There was a fan video where Gannon is right up in DeMarcado's grill and then appears to strike him as he's walking off. So the Cardinals are fining Gannon $100,000.
Hey, if the film shows that, as it does, that's what it seemed like, then he deserves to get fined. That's the difference, again, and I said this earlier, that's the difference between a young coach and a more seasoned veteran coach, a coach that acts on emotion and a coach that sort of thinks things out. I was watching Mike Vrabel on the sideline this past weekend. Was it yesterday? Yeah, they played yesterday.
Sunday night.
Yeah. And they had like two penalties in a row, like, I mean, devastating penalties. And Vrabel didn't overreact. He didn't do it. He just had a stone face, like, seriously? This is what we're going to do? Okay. That's keeping your composure. That's knowing that how volatile this sport can be and how quickly it can change, emotions can change. But the one thing that can't change is your head coach. Your head coach can't be that emotional when it comes to a player, because a whole bunch of things happen in the game that people don't even know about during the game on the sideline. And for that coach to be that emotional, he deserved to be fined. He did. Because you just don't put your hand on another player. Because if a player did that to a coach, then they would have been the NFL would have fined him and suspended him if it was the other way around.
So I'm curious why, if the Cardinals thought that act justified a fine, why the NFL also didn't think it justified.
I'm not
justified.
Sure. Because it sure enough looked like if they're going to fine him $100,000, they saw something worth fining him $100,000 for. Why the league? I guess since they did it so big,
the league was like, that's fine.
We're good with it. Because they're not going to suspend him. And I don't expect them to suspend him. He shouldn't get suspended. But, yeah, you should get fined for what you did.
Yeah, and it's a grainy video, but you can clearly see Gannon up in DeMarcado's face. And then as he walks away, appears to like kind of smack him.
Not on his side, not in the face or anything like that.
I know that, like, I looked at it, I have to look at it closer. And like you said, it's not the most focused thing. It happens pretty quick. But, man, like, compare that to Bobby Knight grabbing the guy around the throat. Or like,
or coaches grabbing face masks.
There's stuff that used to happen where, I have been chewed out. I've never had a coach grab me or anything like that. But, I mean, if there's ever a play where you deserve to get chewed out at least.
Yeah, chewed out.
That's the play.
Yeah, absolutely. Chewed out.
This has happened.
Every day, all day.
every football player has got to be thinking, look, I don't want to be that guy on the jumbotron. Somebody needs to do a psychological study. Like somebody who's a psychology major. Why does that happen?
It's muscle memory. It's just muscle. I get the ball out of my hand.
You're not in the back of your mind thinking, don't do it.
Nobody's thinking that way, Willie. Nobody. I don't know why, but I never ran in the end zone thinking, don't drop the ball. I just ran in the end zone.
But it's not like they're spiking it. They just leave it out. It's like I'm handing you a quarter or something in the palm of my hand. I'm opening up my hand.
George Gervin. You know about George Gervin.
It's a finger roll.
Ice man finger roll. Come on now.
Why are you finger rolling? Don't you want to spike it? Like go to the back of the end zone and spike it.
That's not cool anymore, Willie.
No.
You got to finger roll it, man.
Before we go, I do want to get Derek Mason's thoughts on his old friend, Joe Flacco. Continuing his tour of the AFC North, being traded from the Browns to the Bengals today.
He's been to the Ravens, the Browns, the Bengals. The only team he hadn't been to is Pittsburgh. Well,
please, Lord,
the only reason he didn't
the
go
only
to Pittsburgh
quarterback,
because Aaron Rodgers beat him there.
The only quarterback, according to Adam Schefter, in the Super Bowl era to start for both the Bengals and Browns is Jeff Driscoll. No quarterback has ever started for the Bengals, Browns, and Ravens in his career until Joe Flacco this weekend.
Absolutely. I mean, listen, I'm happy for Joe, man.
It was Joe Flacco in a sixth for a fifth.
Yeah, I'm happy
for Joe.
Because
Jake Browning.
He's not.
Remember when everybody wanted to trade for Jake Browning?
Yeah, now what you see.
Isn't that interesting? Because I think all of us were like, hey. Yeah.
Hey,
Brian Callahan had Jake Browning. Jake Browning's pretty good.
Well, that's why Callahan was like, nah, we're good.
You got to go with the old man.
But what were you just talking about?
Joe Flacco.
I'm happy for Joe Flacco. I really am, man. He's, you know, listen, if you can, he's what, 18 years now? 17, somewhere around there.
He's about 56 years old.
Seeing him when he first came into the league.
He's 40.
And he's still.
This is year 18 for Joe Flacco.
Good for Joe, man. If you could still play this game at a level that's respectable, which he can. He's no starter anymore. But if you could be a solid backup, man, play until they put your ass out.
You know what this means? You know what this means, though? Shador Sanders, one step closer to being the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns.
The internet's going to break that
out. Oh, my God. Rex Ryan is going to be pissed. But that'll do it for us today. A reminder, we are on from 3 to 5 tomorrow. Predators preview show from 5 to 7. But we will be back at 3 o'clock. Smashville Live from Brewhouse South in Cool Springs with Nick Hague and Nick Perbix is next.
Be love. Love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful day. I love you. The team loves you. You hear the music. Don't forget about us, because we ain't going to forget about you. We'll be back tomorrow. Same time, different day, same faces. Peace.